Hello, you're listening to Earth Matters, produced in the studios of 3CR Radio in Fitzroy, Victoria, and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. We're bringing you environmental and social justice stories. I'm Kerry Lee Harding. This week on the show, you'll hear from Brian Andy, Yorta Yorta man, broadcaster and writer, and a social media whiz on the very first Yirrumboy First Nations Arts Festival from the 5th to the 14th of May. You'll hear more on Yirrumboy as we hear from Brian and his views on local community arts, culture and identity in Melbourne, as Brian shares his recent work as the social media boss man for Yirrumboy Socials on Facebook and Instagram. And you'll hear about his work as a black critic, and you'll also hear about a very special project Brian created for the festival, which brought black drag queens reading children's Dreamtime stories in the city of Melbourne. And we also unpack some of the performances featured at Yirrumboy Festival 2017.
Hi, my name is Brian Andy, and I'm a Yorta Yorta man from Cummeragunja, which is on the Murray River, for those of you that don't know. It's near Echuca, and I live in Melbourne at the moment.
And tell me about your role at Yirrumboy in digital media.
Yeah, I worked as the social media boss man, as I called myself, for Yirrumboy First Nations Arts Festival. It was on in Melbourne from the 5th to the 14th of May. And so my role was pretty much looking after the Facebook and Instagram accounts and being the voice, I guess, as part of the festival, in the lead up to it and during the festival.
And not only Facebook and Instagram, but I also understand you were hosting Indigenous X on Twitter.
I was asked to host Indigenous X, that amazing account run by Luke Pearson and Jack Lattimore. It was pretty amazing. I thought that was, I don't know what to say really. It was really fun to be part of that, because I've always admired what they do, those guys, through Indigenous X, and just to kind of have that platform to put your voice out there. And so I, talked up being gay, I talked up being black, I talked up Yirrumboy, so it was really fun.
And tell me about your role as a digital producer, if you like, on socials, because not many black fellas are working in the role as in social media. Is it fair for me to say that, do you think?
Yeah, I guess, statistically, black fellas use Facebook more than the rest of the non-Indigenous population. And so, I'm not exactly sure of the exact statistics.
Wow.
But yeah, black fellas, it's kind of like the new camping ground or the new fire for us, really. Like, I've always said that Facebook, nothing beats the Koori grapevine,
yes.
Not even Facebook. And I think, because of that whole, the way we interact, our, networks, our kinship systems, our need to kind of know what's going on, Facebook's become a really good forum for that type of communication, social media. So, speaking of like Luke Pearson, he is the new ABC's new digital producer within the Indigenous realm. And so he's got that job of looking after how they might communicate through social media through the ABC nationally. And there are a few people out there, but I'll be honest, I have a marketing background. I used to work with the Melbourne International Arts Festival in their marketing department, looked after all the marketing. I was a marketing coordinator with them, and then I worked with the Australia Council for the Arts with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Arts Board. And so I'm fairly sort of au fait and across that sort of traditional marketing, communications, publicity, but I'd never really delved into the social media realm, so it was all new for me. I love Facebook, and I think it worked well.
And how different is it driving, I guess, the other end of Facebook as opposed to being a user at the front end, being on the back end of things?
I guess, yeah.
Delivering that content.
Yeah, I banked on my skills of just sort of, knowing. I'm pretty casual when it comes to Facebook and my own presence on Facebook. And I have a rule where I like to keep things, if they get political, they might get a little bit, they might get a bit bitey, or they might get, I might express myself in a way that I wouldn't normally do. But when it comes to my own personal stuff, I just tend to, kind of have this rule for myself where just keep it really nice, keep it lively, keep it conversational. And so I banked on those skills for Urine Boy just to, you know, kind of keep that tone, I guess, for the festival. It was interesting because, you're not, when you're presenting through social media for a festival, you kind of have to have that consistent voice, I guess, but you have to kind of keep it really unpersonal or think about the collective and think about how we are doing this and we're doing that. And so I kind of, you know, delved into that voice, I guess. And another thing that added to that, I mean, as an Aboriginal man, I kind of really relished that opportunity, but just as a gay man too, and just as somebody working on the festival with Jacob, who is also gay, and he kind of programmed a lot of queer content into Urine Boy. And so it was nice to kind of just, you know, get a bit camp with my language too and just have a bit of fun with that. So, yeah, that's, you know, I guess that's the kind of approach I took to it. But like I said, I haven't really worked in the digital or sort of social media realm. And so it was really lovely to kind of be paid to sit on Facebook.
How lucky are you? I might be a little bit jealous. You were just talking about there about speaking all camp, talking about all things camp. One of the other projects, can I say project, that you're involved with for Urine Boy Festival involved drag queens reading to children. Tell me more about this. What a beautiful concept.
Yeah, I guess it was derived from this project that happens in Brooklyn in New York City. And it's called basically Drag Storytelling. And each week in their public libraries, they have drag queens go along and offer a storybook reading to the local kids in the community. And I guess its intent is to just break down those notions of what is gender, you know, what a drag queen might look like. It's okay to kind of see a guy with a beard in a dress kind of thing, and just pushing that kind of that notion or that that value to kids. They're not pushing it, it's probably the wrong word, but just sort of allowing kids to be non-judgmental and just to, you know, kind of hear a story, a lovely yarn from a drag queen, and just sort of, you know, to break down those, any kind of sense of bigotry. We kind of need that right now when it comes to, you know, you look at Trump, who's in power now, even just locally within Australia, you've got the Turnbull government, and queer rights aren't even, we don't have equal rights when it comes to marriage equality. And so, yeah, like we wanted to take on that concept of just, you know, breaking down barriers, encouraging a non-judgmental point of view when it comes to queer lives. And so we thought, let's go with the black drag queen. And we produced an event, or I produced an event rather, called Black Drags Dreamtime Storytelling. And so we had three drag queens throughout the city of Melbourne as part of Burrinyunnable, which was presented as part of the festival on the 13th of May, on the Saturday, the last Saturday of the festival. And the drag queens just basically read Dreamtime stories to the kids and people that were in the audience. So we occupied a lot of the busking sites that are in Melbourne. One of them was the Purse on the corner of Elizabeth and Bourke Street in the mall there.
Oh, that gorgeous stone-looking Purse.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. And so I kind of had a drag queen miscellaneous from Darwin.
Sitting on a purse.
She just sat on a purse. It was very camp. It was really lovely. And she just read, you know, these Dreamtime stories, those illustrated types that you sort of might find in libraries and such, to the kids and to the people that were kind of passing by.
What were some of the reactions from the littlies and the older ones as well?
Yeah,
the
we had three sites, one at the State Library, that was Thomas Bevan, and we had Davey Thompson, who was in the City Library. And Davey, I think Miscellaneous had a great position, so she got a lot of passers-by and a lot of traffic.
Bourke Street. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And whereas Davey, he kind of got a lot of the younger kids coming in, and he just loved it. Like, I mean, reports back from him for the day. He was stationed there from about 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., so had about four readings throughout the day. And, yeah, the response was really good. I think, you know, just I don't think kids bat an eyelid when it comes to, you know, kind of seeing, you know, how we observe or how we dictate gender rules when it comes to a man in a dress. And so, yeah, I think, you know, like Davey, from his feedback, I think it was really well received from his end. But I think they all had a great time. They were really, you know, kind of chuffed to be involved with that event. And, yeah, and I guess it was, I mean, I loved producing it because it was just like this fantastic concept that Jacob Boehm, the creative director of Urine Boy, highlighted to me in Outblack. And we just said, let's run with this and let's go with this. So it was really nice to be visible too.
And maybe the very first time in the world that black drag queens have done such a thing, Brian and Andy?
I reckon it's probably a first, yeah, like a first for a First Nations festival. So there you go, yeah.
Yeah. Now, getting back to the First Nations Arts Festival, I also know you're involved with the festival. You're one of the black critics. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that and your role as a black critic.
Yeah, Black Critics was a Urine Boy initiated project, and it was actually quite inspired because I guess on the landscape, when it comes to how white non-Indigenous people might critique Aboriginal work, you kind of recognise that there's a bit of a void where people might be a little bit too... what's the word I'm looking for?
Nice.
I get a bit too nice, exactly.
Safe.
A bit too safe, a bit too kind of hard to actually criticise something if it's not particularly strong work.
Mm.
And so, you might see a production, for example, and certain elements might work and certain elements might not. And as a black person, when you go and see a show, you kind of walk away and go, well, you know, I like the way that they designed the set and how that fed into the narrative or whatever. But then you might kind of say, but the... you know, the music sucked, for example. That's just an example pulling from the top of my head.
None of the music sucked at Yurrumboy,
by the way. Well, yeah, let's point that out. No music at Yurrumboy sucked. But, I mean, you kind of walk away from those performances you might see and, you know, you'll have that opinion or you'll have that critique and then you'll read, like, a non-Indigenous person's take on it. And it's kind of frustrating because you know that they should have maybe said, you know, the music wasn't as well as it could have been or whatever. And they often don't say that because they, you know, they might have some kind of fear of being racist or guilt around that kind of stuff. And so Black Critics was really quite vital in the sense of just ensuring that when you're talking about our art and our culture, I'll use the term culture too, you actually have that kind of informed lens when it comes to that work. So, and also just that kind of robust response to, like, say, some kind of Aboriginal art presentation. And that's, I guess, the philosophy or the values behind Black Critics. And I applied back in April, I think it was, or February, to be a Black Critic. And I've had a bit of writing experience through Lonely Planet and through my work in the marketing realm. And I was fortunately accepted as a Black Critic. And so there was nine of us. One had to drop out, unfortunately, because of family commitments. But there was eight in the end. And we went through a series of masterclasses. Yurrumboy and Jacob did was they linked up with The Guardian and said, look, we'd like to run a series of masterclasses, especially for the Black Critics. And so we had, all those writers you might see with The Guardian. Kate Hennessy springs to mind because she was fabulous. Van Badham was another one that kind of came in and did opinion writing. We had Kate Howard, who dealt with theatre. And so each weekend, over a series of weekends, we went into these masterclasses. And they were just, you know, they gave us all their insights as to how they might approach a review, what the kind of elements they might put into it. But, you know, I guess part of the thread was that they were really quite, they too identified that gap within the industry or within the reviewing industry where, you know, people often take that softly approach to Indigenous work because they, you know, might not have the skills or the understanding or the cultural context, to use a term. And so, we did that series of masterclasses and they were bookended by Indigenous ex, Jack Lattimore and Luke Pearson, who came along to the first session and to the last one just to kind of, I guess, you know, bookend and give us a bit of a sense of how we might think about approaching those masterclasses with that black lens. And I think the results were really good. Like, I mean, they we got a lot of publishing outcomes through that particular that project as part of Yurrumboy. Some of our writers got picked up with Time Out.
The Guardian, I've heard.
Well, The Guardian, yeah,
heard you did with The Guardian.
I got a piece with The Guardian, yeah. And
tell me about that piece, can you?
Yeah, it was, I guess it was part of my Indigenous ex hosting, but they required you to put up a piece of around about 800 words, I think it was. And I went and saw a show called Fire Bucket as part of the festival. And I thought I'd just, you know, kind of give a bit of a personal insider response to that show and just talk about, I guess, the need for Aboriginal voices, how lucky we were as part of Yurrumboy to be surrounded by so many strong, amazing First Nations voices from, you know, from Australia, but also from overseas. And so that's the kind of thread of my Guardian piece. And Fire Bucket was a show that was presented by Uncle Wes Mahn through Mughalin Theatre, who are based in Sydney, an Aboriginal theatre company up that way.
Okay.
And Uncle Wes just like it was probably one of the most profound theatrical experiences I've had in my life, and I've been to a lot of theatre.
Wow!
But he just basically had this set up around a fire or a fire bucket, as he called it,
outside, yeah.
Wow. At the back of the Willem Nalut, which was our festival hub during the festival, and he just basically sat around, like we all sat around his fire, his fire bucket, and he just told us yarns. And there was a scripted, I got a sense that it was a scripted performance. Like he had, I guess, maybe he worked from themes, I don't know. But the sense you got, like he just opened up with this, you know, comment as to why we were smoked as we walked into the space. He talked about smoking as a bit of a I guess, an underpinning value or thing in Aboriginal culture. And then he spoke about his life, and he's a 95-year-old man from Biggamble, which is like, you know, northwest New South Wales, near the border of Queensland.
Did you say 95-year-old man?
95 years old, like nearly a
century.
Amazing. And he drove down to Melbourne just to present Fire Bucket.
He drove down? Bless.
Yeah, like, I mean, he doesn't fly on planes, so he just came down and just, yeah, was driven down the Hume Highway and came to Melbourne and presented Fire Bucket. And, yeah, so my piece was about that. I just felt really quite inspired about that whole thing of, you know, we're so lucky to have all these Aboriginal voices as part of Yirrumboy. And I just sort of started it out with a reflection on my grandparents and how they... you know, amazing, exquisite storytellers, and how they, you know, I could almost hear their voices when I listened to Uncle Wes Mann by his fire bucket. So that was the kind of thread of the piece.
How beautiful to bring that back to your own personal experiences. And can I ask, what did your grandparents think of your piece of writing in The Guardian?
Yeah, it's funny because I literally just saw them this past weekend, and I went up home to celebrate my mother's 60th birthday party and put on a party for her. And my grandparents, because The Guardian's online, they don't have internet or interwebs up at Cumbra there. And so I printed it out for them and I took it up home. And Nan was really touched by it. And she said, that's really nice. And she's not big on compliments, but my grandfather, he read it and he said, wow, that's really beautiful. And I was really quite chuffed by that because he's not... I mean, like Nan, he's sort of a man of few words. When he talks, he can talk the leg off a chair, but he's not into that kind of flowery language, I guess. And so when he said, that is beautiful, I was just like, oh, my God, I've done it. I feel really quite touched by that. So, yeah, they love the story and they love the kind of link to Uncle Wes too. And I guess that's another intent I wanted from the piece, was just to kind of show that, you know, we are a collective of voices and we, you know, might have individual voices in our community, but... as a collective, we speak from the same place or same position.
Absolutely, we do indeed. You're listening to Earth Matters. I'm with Brian Andy in the studio from the Yirrumboy Festival. Going back to the festival now, Brian, did you get out and about to see any other shows? I know you were so busy during that whole time.
Yeah, it was 10 days and it was amazing. Like it was, I think I saw probably two things a day. There was over 60 events as presented as part of Yirrumboy throughout the 10 days. There were over 370 artists, First Nations artists from across the world and our country here in Australia. Mm. And so there was heaps on. So I probably averaged around about two shows a day, I guess, or two experiences a day. And
that's amazing. I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Yeah. How did you manage that?
Well, I guess that Wilumna, which means our place in the local Wurrung tongue, that was our festival hub. And so it kind of was handy to have that as the base and the place where we could gather every evening and then see a couple of shows and then just go and talk about them afterwards and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's sort of, you know, part of my MO, I guess, when it comes to getting to those events was just being at Wilumnalut as part of that hub.
And one of those events at Wilumnalut to open the festival and carried on for a few days after that was Chasing Smoke.
Yeah.
By Circus Oz. Blackflip.
Yeah. Blackflip, yeah, the Blackflip crew. And like they're just gone from strength to strength, that program. I remember a friend of mine, Mark Shepherd, he's a Murray fella from up Queensland, from the Atherton Tableland area. And he was down doing Blackflip about 2 years ago. He stayed with me in Melbourne, at my house. And he was part of that. And I saw their outcome presented at the Spiegel tent. And that was beautiful. It was amazing to kind of see, you know, black fellas just getting really beautiful, sensual, athletic, acrobatic as part of this, this program. They develop it over, I think it was just 4 weeks, and then they present it.
Wow.
Whereas Chasing Smoke, it really raised the bar for me, where it, you know, they had an ensemble, an amazingly tight ensemble of six people, I think they were. I'm maybe thinking six, including Davey Thompson, the producer of Blackflip. Mm. But they were just the tightest ensemble, and they really took hold of that, I guess, storytelling. They took the medium of circus, and they presented it in that kind of, you know, that traditional theatre sense of the, you know, the fourth wall is taken down. that and so as an audience member, when you're in that sort of rake seating and watching that, the sense I got from it was just, it was really powerful storytelling, and they took, I guess, you know, a lot of the kind of, what do you call them, the ways of Aboriginal, the ways that blackfellas talk to each other, or the, you know, are the kind of icons, for want of a better word, of our culture. They really took hold of those kind of, those things, and they presented them as part of their act, but all in circus. And it was just really, really strong, powerful storytelling from my perspective. That's how I viewed it. And they really owned things around identity, like how as a black person in Australia, you might have a certain identity that's fostered by racism or politics or society or whatever. And so they just took hold of that notion and said, no, this is who we are. This is where I'm from. This is my family, warts and all. And just, you know, it was really empowering for me as a black fellow watching that, to see them just really go, yeah, you know, we define our identity, and not, it's not sort of at the mercy of, say, the media or, you know, politics or whatever. So it was a really empowering show. And they just did it, like I said, they just did it beautifully in terms of storytelling.
Beautiful. And what I'm hearing there is that they really did that flip, didn't they? Like black flip.
Well, they did. They just turned it on its head. It was like an about face to, you know, any racists out there. You know, they just said, look here, we'll take what you think you know about us. And they just turned it around and owned it. I think that was the main thing for me. That, you know, there was one particular girl as part of it. Oh, there was actually a girl and a guy who spoke about their history and their family history and how they, as blackfellas, were never allowed to own their identity because of the, you know, I guess the spoils of history, or because of the genocidal activities within Australian history, where shame, honour, and just sort of that survival technique where you might, not identify, and how they grappled with that as young people who knew that they were Aboriginal but didn't know, often have a family that articulated that. So it was really strong in that sense too, of just, you know, having them own their identity and saying, look, this is who I am, you know, take it or leave it, but I know who I am, kind of thing, you know. It was really lovely.
Beautiful, beautiful. Makes me really proud hearing those things about our young ones coming through, Brian. But so many other events as well. Native Girl Syndrome was a production that came out from Canada. Did you see that show at all? Heard rave reviews about that one.
Oh, that was such a powerful piece. Actually, did I say, Uncle Wes was amazing in a theatrical sense, but I guess Lara Kramer, a dance company from Canada, First Nations dance company, they just astounded me. They did this piece called Native Girl Syndrome, and it was like probably about an hour long, and it had two female dancers on stage, and they just basically occupied this almost like this wasteland that was the stage. It was made, you know, filled up with tarps, crates, beer cans, I guess man-made materials, and it was just like a tip effectively. And then they just occupied this space and moved in a way that there was little dialogue, but they moved in a manner that kind of showed and told this story of how they were basically the victims, for want of a better word, of colonization and genocide. And they delved into addiction, substance use, alcoholism, mental illness, and just all through dance, pretty much. There was some dialogue but again, it wasn't sort of dialogue that was didactic or, it just basically sort of was screams and this horror. And I remember chatting to people afterwards, and there was a real sense of hopelessness after seeing that show. And
why is that? Do you think people were left feeling like that after seeing Native Girl Syndrome?
I think, because, you know, even in Australia we do tend to euphemise history. I mean, we talk about being this egalitarian nation, which I think is a load of crap. You know, blackfellas have never enjoyed any sense of equality in our country, on our own country. And so, we foster those myths around history and our identity as a nation. And Canada is the same thing. I mean, they've got Trudeau at the moment, and he seems to be doing amazing things from where we sit. But, you just get the sense that these people had a similar experience to us in terms of the effects of colonization. And so it was really quite powerful to have them just sort of own that again and respond to it in their own voice, but through movement. And just, you know, present this amazing dance piece that, yeah, like went for an hour long and it was relentless and hopeless. But I think that's the thing where we need to actually kind of see that in order to kind of process it. And there was a woman I was talking to after the show, and she had a British accent. It was quite thick.
Mm.
And she kind of spoke to me about that whole, you know, well, as a colonizer, as somebody part of this colonizing culture, I just feel really quite, I mean, I'm glad that I saw that. And I'm glad that she said she was glad she saw that. But she was able to just unpack it, I guess, in terms of just getting a sense of, wow, that's what we do to people. That's the effect our culture has on, you know, these First Nations peoples. And again, it was just through this dance piece. And yeah, so it was really quite rich. There was hope in there, though. I found a sense of hope where there was one scene where the women were quite, you know, separate and disparate from each other, you know, kind of physically and just, you know, even within their dialogue and their movements, they were very isolated, and that came across quite strongly. But there was a time when, as part of the performance, where one of the women, she put on a rug that had wolves on it. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, it was kind of wolves howling at the moon, basically. And I thought of that creation story from Native Americans, where one of their creation stories talks about how a wolf and his mate meet each other, fall in love, and they create a love song that then becomes how the world is created or enacted. And I just thought of that.
Beautiful.
And how I guess that blanket to me in this desolate, hopeless production was just, I guess, that sense of hope of, like, one of the dancers put on her body and the other dancer responded to her and came next to her, and they just sort of had a bit of a dialogue, I guess, or an interaction. There was no words, actually, but they just connected. And I think that for me was a sense of hope of just, like, well, their hope is in that culture and in those creation stories and that blanket. You know, it's a symbol of warmth too, but yeah, like, it was hopeless, but it was particularly hopeful seeing those symbols, I guess. Yeah.
Mm. And hopeful as well that it actually impacts the non-Indigenous people in the audience, like you're talking about that woman just before there. Do you think that this was the first time that she'd felt such a way, that the impact of colonisation, what the impact has done to Aboriginal people on her, you know, whose land she's living on, this woman?
Yeah, well, I guess that's the beauty of Yirrumbwa, just, you know, that kind of access to those voices. Because, like I said earlier, it's rare to find this un-euphemised insight into Australian culture.
That was Brian Andy, Yorta Yorta Man broadcaster, writer and a social media whiz. You've been listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network with Kerry Lee Harding. You've been listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network with Kerry Lee Harding. Today on the show, you heard from Brian Andy and on his most recent work as the social media boss man for the festival that was the Yirrumbwa First Nations Arts Festival, held in Melbourne from the 5th to the 14th of May. And you also heard from, and you also heard Brian yarn on his work with the Black Critics, Dumbawini Fire Talk. And we also heard from Brian as we unpacked some of the shows featured at the Yirrumbwa Festival, including Native Girl Syndrome, Uncle Wes Mann's, and we also heard from Brian as we unpacked some of the shows featured at the Yirrumbwa Festival, including Native Girl Syndrome, Fire Bucket featuring Uncle Wes Mann, and Black Flip by Circus Oz. On this program today, you also heard about the fabulous new initiative for Yirrumbwa, which had black drag queens reading Dreamtime stories to young ones in the city of Melbourne. Today's podcast and others like it can be downloaded at earthmatters.org.au. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Association for their generous financial support and the Community Radio Network for distributing this show around Australia. Earth Matters was produced in the studios of 3CR Radio in Fitzroy, Melbourne. Our contact phone number is 03-9419-8377. Our email is earthmatters3cr@gmail.com. Well, that's all for today, folks, but we'll be back again next week with more green news from all over this awesome planet. Until then, I'm Kerry Lee Harding. I'll see you later.